Midpoint Site, Jeremy here in Kentucky on Republic Broadcasting Network. And please donate to the station. Give the much needed fundage. This is your Tuesday night broadcast with Dr. Patrick Slattery. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Jeremy.
So Trump has initiated a ceasefire. We don't expect Israel to uphold its side of the bargain. And already there is talk about hostages not being released. And the full fury of the Trump administration coming down on Hamas, should that happen. Where are we at on that?
Well, we are at Sunday night, so this part of the show is being recorded. And so who knows what's going to happen over the next 48 hours. But the ceasefire that Trump's Jewish money bag guy, Steve Wyckoff, that he had more or less imposed on Netanyahu a couple of days before the inauguration, it's still in effect. Obviously, Israel routinely violates it, but the violations pale in comparison to the massive genocidal onslaught that had been going on for the prior 15 months. So, and then Trump last week was saying, well, if Hamas doesn't release all the hostages by, let's just say noon time on Saturday, didn't specify what time zone, but noon Saturday, as far as I'm concerned, he said, as far as I'm concerned, all hell can break loose. All hell can break loose. And then he said, frankly, I don't think they're going to do it. What does that mean? They're going to do it. I presume he meant Hamas will release all of the hostages because a lot of them are dead. I think a lot of them are dead and they're not going to do it. And all hell's going to break loose. All hell could break loose. That's what he was saying, characteristically unspecific. And the thing is, the ceasefire agreement, and he said, they got to release all the hostages all at once, not in drips and drabs and ones and twos and fours and threes and twos. Well, the agreement that Steve Wyckoff, or whatever his name is, had the Jewish state agree to was to have the Jewish captives, we should call them captives and not hostages, because a lot of them were in uniform when they were taken prisoners. So they were really prisoners of war, a lot of them. But the agreement was that they would be released in small groups and in exchanges where the Jewish state would be releasing much more substantial, much larger groups of the Palestinian that it's taken prisoner and abused and tortured in their jails. You know, one thing, when you see certainly the early rounds of the released Jews that Hamas was releasing, the early rounds, they were in very good shape. They were looking a lot more hungry, gaunt in the most recent exchanges, apparently. I didn't actually see the pictures, but that's what people say. But of course, everybody in Gaza is looking gaunt because there's not much food there. The Palestinians who are being released by the Jewish state of Israel, they look horrible, and they're on stretchers and gurneys. And why should that be? Because there's plenty of food in Israel. That's because they've been purposely abused and tortured. So there's that. There was one other thing I just wanted to point out, but I forgot. So I'll kick it back to you, Jeremy.
Well, we mentioned Trump being under a mandate from the American populace to roll back wokeness. Also, he's under a mandate from the Jewish powers that I think were key in his election to take the Gaza Strip. And, you know, this was very much articulated in his latest deal to take all the Palestinians out, relocate them to Egypt and Jordan, and rebuild the Gaza Strip. So I think he's under a mandate to do that. The Guardian put out an article that the storm recovered. Israeli settlers are pushing ahead with a largely unnoticed de facto annexation of large areas of rural land in the occupied West Bank. That has already seen the almost total displacement of Bedouin in large areas. Bedouin being, I guess, the Palestinian people.
Well, Bedouin are the traditionally nomadic people. They're not the the olive farmers. They're not the townspeople. Bedouins are the traditionally nomadic people.
Palestinian in nature.
They're Arab, yeah, and a lot of them are in the south in the Negev Desert, but I guess there's some in the West Bank, and maybe they're more settled now than they used to be, but yeah, they are traditionally nomadic, the Bedouin. They're, you know, camel herders and whatnot.
Well, so there's still a push for Israeli settlers going into this area, and again, when Trump rebuilds it, if he rebuilds it, if this comes to pass, who's going to occupy it? It's going to be Israelis. I think, in an attempt for Israel to own the greater Israel and to not have a two-state situation, the two-state solution is definitely in favor of the UN. You go back to the 1967 borders. And China, you know, as we discussed last week, China has voiced its support of a two-state solution of a Palestinian state. So the question is, when do the adults take charge in the room? You know, when does China and Russia come in? And do you think that the Trump administration is looking to give up ground on on the Russia-Ukraine debacle? They're looking to give up ground in order to earn favor with Russia and sort of pull them away from China. Do you think the Trump administration sees this time when China will come in and say, look, you know, we're pushing for a two-state solution here, and this whole thing of rebuilding Gaza is not plausible?
Well, okay, so the General Keith Kellogg, who's a Cold Warrior boomer, who's been, I guess, emerged in a Pentagon groupthink and is completely unrealistic. He's come out and stated that as part of any settlement, he wants Russia to disassociate itself from alliances with China or Iran. The United States has no leverage with Russia, and it's not in a position to say this. And as long as people are saying things like that, there's not going to be any negotiated settlement of Ukraine. Russia doesn't need a negotiated settlement of Ukraine. Russia will there's not going to be a ceasefire until Russian demands are met. And if they're not met, Russia, they can continue to fight. They're not the ones losing the war. They're the ones winning. They can continue to fight. And right now, the ratio of Russian casualties to Ukrainian casualties is even much more in favor of Russia than it was 6 months or 12 months or 2 years ago. So, I mean, Russia is just not losing a lot of people right now. And so the sooner that Russia's demands are met, the less lives and the less land Ukraine or whatever entity is left is going to have to sacrifice. So there's a complete lack of reality there. Regarding what's going on with Israel, the Jewish state, and its plans and its ambitions and the Trump administration, when you look at these two territories that are supposed to make up the future Palestinian state, according to the United Nations, you got the West Bank and you have the Gaza or the Gaza Strip. And they're how far apart are they from each other? Like 40 or 50 miles at their closest points. They're not that far away from each other at their closest points, but they don't border each other. And they actually have fairly different histories. So after the Nakba, 1948, where Israel seized control not just of the 51% or whatever it was of the British held territory of Palestine, they didn't just seize that for themselves, but they seized about half of what was left that was supposed to under the UN partition plan was supposed to be part of the New Palestine. They seized about half of that. And the people, the Palestinians who had been living in those that three quarters of what became Israel, of three quarters of Palestine that became Israel, those that had been living there, they went as refugees to Jordan, to Lebanon, but also to the West Bank and Gaza. And so Gaza was really a giant refugee camp and much more densely populated than it had ever been before. And so most of the people in Gaza and an awful big hunk of the people in the West Bank are refugees or descendants of refugees from 1948. And then in 1967, from 1948 to 1967, the West Bank was incorporated into Jordan, and the Gaza Strip was administered by Egypt. And then in 1967, both territories were seized by Israel, but Israel never annexed them. They occupied them, and they sent settlers to both areas, but they sent a lot of settlers. The settler movement was very, very big in the West Bank, and so you got into the tens of thousands and then the hundreds of thousands, and now it's like about three quarters of a million Jews who live in that area, along with maybe 2 million Palestinians, maybe closer to 3 million. But so there's a very significant Jewish settlement, a bunch of settlements, presences, a very big presence in the West Bank. There was never a very big settler movement in Gaza because Gaza was already so densely populated. So it wasn't very attractive. It didn't lend itself. And when in 2005, Israel changed its tactic and they withdrew their troops and it was only about 5,000 settlers. It was less than 10,000. There was a small number of settlers. They pulled them out. They pulled their troops and their settlers out of Gaza, and then they just laid siege to it. And that's been the situation. Whereas that was 2005. Since 2005, the settlements in the West Bank have grown in size. More and more people. They've taken more land, and this has been an ongoing process where just slowly but surely they're taking up all the land. And since October 7th. Obviously, Gaza's gotten most of the attention because that's where most of the killings taken place. But since October 7th, there's been a marked escalation in the not necessarily the settlement activity, not necessarily sending new settlers so much, but the settlers, the 700,000 heavily armed illegal settlers, Jewish settlers in the West Bank, have become extremely aggressive. And they've been shooting and killing and seizing land and all of that. And so I just want to clarify that those are the two things that are going on. And the last thing I want to say is, Trump's made this very outlandish proposal about taking ownership of Gaza, buying it from whom? It's completely unrealistic. I think it's unworkable. Why is he doing it? I can't say. Did he really think he was going to do that? He's been certainly regarding Ukraine. These first 3 weeks of his administration, he's been very low info and seems to misunderstand the situation in Russia. Russia is not facing large casualties. The Russian economy is doing just fine. He seems to have completely misunderstood that. Certainly, Keith Kellogg completely misunderstood it. The one person who seems to understand it is Tulsi Gabbard, and she only was able to join the administration on Thursday, this past Thursday. And perhaps she might be partly responsible for a positive phone call that took place between Putin and Trump, I think on Friday or Saturday, where they had a good constructive phone call. Is she going to be able to inject some sanity into this Gaza thing? I just don't see Trump's Gaza proposal as being at all realistic. And who knows? Who knows whether he actually believed that this was a good idea or whether it was just kind of similar to the way he was dealing with North Korea, where in his first term, where he threatened basically to blow North Korea up off the map with nukes, and then became best friends with Kim Jong-un. So I have no, I can't say, I don't even know what Trump is thinking there. But my, but all I am saying is that the, his Gaza proposal is unworkable. It's impossible. And so far it hasn't killed anybody. It's retarded, but he hasn't killed anybody with it. So I just want to put that in that perspective.
And there's this pivot to China. You know, Pete Hegseth has mentioned Europe is on its own as the U.S. pivots to China. Excuse me. Maybe that's because China has called for a two-state solution for peace in the Middle East. Website is, and this is a big one, Anadolu Ajazni website. Palestine is at the core of Middle East issue as China stresses two-state solution for peace. China's foreign minister, Wang Yi, has said that the fundamental solution to the Middle East issue lies in implementing the two-state solution. Wang made these remarks during his meeting with Foreign Minister, Israeli Foreign Minister Gideon Sa'ar, on the sidelines of the Munich Security Conference in Germany on Saturday.
Who's foreign minister? Who's this Gideon Sa'ar?
The foreign minister of Israel.
God. Okay. So, of the Jewish state. The Jewish state.
So, yeah. Wang is saying that there's got to be a two-state solution. You know, this in the wake of Pete Hegseth saying that, you know, we got to pivot from protecting Europe and focus on China. There seems to be a a contingency between the U.S. foreign policy, which is, you know, Trump taking over the Gaza Strip, and the Chinese foreign policy, which is saying that a two-state solution is fundamental to Middle East peace. You know, this according to Wang Yi. So, is the Trump administration pulling away from the Russia-Ukraine thing and giving grounds to that to try to pull Russia on its side to go against China? You know, is that even possible? Is that even a thing? Because China seems dead set on peace in the Middle East, being contingent on a two-state solution. In other words, having a Palestinian state. These two administrations are at odds, the Chinese administration and the Trump administration on foreign policy. Mm-hmm. That's what it
was. Yeah. And a lot of people who were in the Trump's first administration were China hawks. A lot of them, Marco Rubio is a China hawk. So a lot of these people are China hawks. And I'm just going to reemphasize, I absolutely stand with the Chinks. Everybody knows that I stand with the Chinks. They are totally the good guys in the in their relationship with.
And I'm alone. Skin, yet you.
Wake up. Stop wasting your own time. Today, my friends, Americans are more pessimistic about the economy than they have been in a very long time. And it can be soul-crushing to work as hard as you possibly can, still not have enough money for all the bills. If you're feeling a tremendous amount of stress about your finances, you ain't alone. According to a recent survey, approximately half the entire population is struggling with mental health issues due to financial stress. 47% of adults say concerns about money have at least occasionally caused anxiety, stress, worrisome thoughts, loss of sleep, depression, or other effects. That according to Bankrate's latest money and mental health survey. Bankrate? Who in the hell is Bankrate? Call Kettle Moraine Limited today. At 602-799-8214. 65% of the people say their biggest concern is inflation and rising prices, and nearly 60% say their stress derives from paying for everyday expenses such as groceries, utilities. 56% say they're worried about having enough emergency savings. 47% are most concerned about being in debt. I like the people that are worried about having enough emergency savings. That's another one of the reasons that you should have been buying gold and silver years ago. Stop worrying about what it's worth from day to day. It's up, it's down, it's inside out. You stop worrying about those things. You can call Kettle Moraine at 602-799-8214 for a private consultation. That's 602-799-8214. Protect your money now or forever kiss it goodbye. Call Kettle Moraine Limited today at 602-799-8214.
Hey there, this is Sheila with Hempaste by Minutra. Why is Hempaste better than other CBD options on the market? It's important to point out that the common CBD oil does not contain CBDA or CBGA, and they're only found in fresh or raw hemp products, like Hempaste. Hempaste contains the entire plant, minus any stems. This means the product retains the complete genetic code of the plant, which also includes those two vital cannabinoids, CBGA and CBDA. Over and over, experts keep saying the more intact or less processed the hemp plant is, the more effective it is. Happy Hemp Paste.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for Hemp Paste at republicbroadcasting.org. And visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Call 855-656-8872. Mention RBN.
Are China hawks. And I'm just going to reemphasize, I absolutely stand with the Chinks. Everybody knows that. I stand with the Chinks. They are totally the good guys in the in their relationship with the United States. So they're the good guys. The Jewish controlled the United States are the bad guys. And if it wasn't for China, Russia may not have been able to withstand this the Newland plan to sacrifice Ukraine as, like, I don't know, Isaac was supposed to do with his son or something. I don't know. I'm not going to make biblical references because I'll just expose my ignorance. But Ukraine was just supposed to be a sacrifice in order to then jump up and down and say, oh, the world has to sanction Russia. And those sanctions were supposed to overthrow, to topple the government. A lot of people have been saying this. I've been saying it all along. It's absolutely clear this was the case, and it might have worked had it happened in 2017, but it didn't work in 2022, and it didn't work because the Chinese didn't go along with it. And so, the best thing for the world, the best development, the most hopeful development in the world, in my lifetime, is the Chinese-Russian alliance. I think that's the most hopeful thing that I can ever remember seeing. You know, we've been under this, frankly, this Jewish tyranny, and the Americans don't know what the hell's going on. They don't seem to be poised to free ourselves. You know, the Trump administration might make some progress on a few issues. It might slow down some of the deterioration, but the people aren't suddenly going to get red-pilled and free ourselves. That's not going to happen. I think this relationship between China and Russia is extremely positive. And yeah, and people like Marco Rubio and Keith Kellogg and for years and years, Tucker Carlson, they want to be friendly with, well, maybe not even Keith Kellogg, but Tucker Carlson's whole thing is we got to be friendly to Russia so that we can go against the slanty-eyed Chinks. That's just, he says it all over and over again. And why?
Does he help
the Jews?
He doesn't say slanty-eyed Chinks, though, does he?
He thinks it. He thinks it.
So the Trump administration is not going to be able to pull Russia away from China.
No, why the hell would – I mean, why would – Putin's been around now for over 25 years, and he's been betrayed over and over and over again, and he knows what the score is. There's absolutely nothing that the United States has to offer Russia. China has been a very good neighbor. China is a great economic partner. The United States, what does the United States have to offer? So that ship has sailed. It might have still been around. Maybe it was still around in 2014 if Victoria Nuland hadn't overthrown the Viktor Yanukovych's government. But it's too late. That ship is long gone. And there's a Chinese-Russia alliance. And the United States is a sinking power. And, you know, so there's MAGA, right? Make America Great Again. And I was thinking, all right, well, that's not going to happen. But I was thinking, well, maybe make America not Israel's bitch anymore. What would that be? Maniba? But Maniba, that's not very catchy. And then I was thinking, make America not Israel's totally. Wait a minute.
Matt, you've got Matt. So
totally
far.
Outrageous bitch. Okay, make America not Israel's totally outrageous bitch anymore. That's Manitoba. That's Manitoba. Okay, so I've got a Manitoba agenda.
Or well, you mentioned
make America not totally Israel's obvious bitch anymore, or make America not totally Israel's owned bitch anymore. I don't know. Maybe I'm misspelling it. Maybe I'm a little bit dyslexic, but you know where I'm going with this.
You mentioned good guys and bad guys. I mean, it doesn't matter what you see as good guys and bad guys. China holds the cards like that. You know, they've got the winning hand. What would it look like for, you know, the United States to go to war with China? The Walmart shelves would be empty, and what's left on the shelves would be, you know, four or five times the price. There's no way.
Mm-hmm.
There's no feasible scenario where the U.S. goes to war with China and comes out on top just because of that issue alone. So with China declaring a two-state solution, I mean, that, you know, that pretty much settles it.
Yeah.
You know, the U.S. is just doing propaganda at this point, you know, talking about owning the Gaza Strip. China's not going to allow this. They have a stake in the game of the Belt and Road Initiative, and you know, they want to be able to deal with this Middle Eastern area of the Greater Israel. And I think they want to deal with a Palestinian state rather than a totally controlled Israeli state. So mm-hmm. there's no scenario where a war with China where the U.S. comes out on top. No scenario.
No. Where would the war be fought? I mean, it's not going to be fought. It's not going to be fought on the Rio Grande. It's not going to be fought in the Western Hemisphere. It's not going to be fought in the Middle East. I mean, the United States is trying to fight in like the Taiwan Straits, 6,000 miles off the Pacific coast against China, which is right there, which against China. I mean, there's no one taking your place since you've been gone.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hi, Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419. Get more tank will save you money every month on gas. I'm Dave Von Kleist, and I noticed increased performance after my first tank of gas. My mileage increased by 2.5 miles per gallon, and I'm saving money on every fill-up. Get more tank is American-made, is used by trucking companies and heavy industry, and is now available to the public. Get more tank works in any gas or diesel engine, cleans your engine, improves performance, reduces emissions, and you'll feel it every time you step on the gas. If you're an owner-operator, farmer, heavy equipment operator, or use any kind of engine from chainsaws, leaf blowers, lawnmowers, ATVs, you name it. Contractors, electricians, plumbers, painters, lawn service companies, Get More Tank will save you money and extend the life of your equipment. Hey, if you've got an engine, then Get More Tank. Save your money, save your engine, reduce your emissions, and save the earth with GetMoreTank.com. A five-pack of GetMoreTank.com is only $22.22 plus shipping. Use the promo code Republic Broadcasting and get 10% off. Get More Tank is EPA registered, doesn't void warranties, and results vary. GetMoreTank.com.
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these five easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your five easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our five easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
Susanna's Secret Real Essential Oils of Nature would like to thank you and RBN listeners for your previous purchases. We're announcing that we have a new waterless diffuser in stock with a full one-year warranty. You just insert the bottle to the top, screw it in, tip it upside down, set your timer, or it's also motion-activated at furion.com. That's furion.com. That's furion.com.
Damage, bring it all home. Follow the breeze, just like a summer song. They stay there forever. I try to remember. Come home.
The United States is trying to fight in like the Taiwan Straits, 6,000 miles off the Pacific coast against China, which is right there, which against China. I mean, the United States, okay, so the United States has a big Navy, but the United States isn't making naval vessels anymore. China is making dozens, if not hundreds, of vessels per one vessel that the United States makes. The United States doesn't make anything anymore. The United States has been deindustrialized. Now, Russia had been deindustrialized after the breakup of the Soviet Union because its manufactured products, for the most part, with the exception of maybe weaponry and aviation, maybe a couple other things, but for the most part, its manufactured products were not competitive. And what Russia did through – well, the 90s were just a disaster all around, but into the 2000s, the first decade or so of Putin, is they concentrated on their energy industry, and they made a lot of money, especially when energy prices went high in the middle of the decade and towards the end of the decade. So Russia had a lot of money. It paid off its debt. It had a lot of debt. It paid off its debt, but then it was just importing – foodstuffs and consumer stuff from Europe, from Germany, from elsewhere. And then the United States started sanctioning it. The sanctions really started in 2008, but really kicked off in 2014 after the Ukraine war. And I used to listen to Stephen F. Cohen every week on the John Batchelor Show back in 2014. And in 2014 in particular, when the sanctions got ramped up, Russia embarked on a program of what is called import substitution. So they stopped importing and they started just developing their own industries for clothing, for consumer appliances. So they started doing this 11 years ago, concentrating on building up their own industry. But also they've got China. Now, what's the United States going to do? The United States is talking about decoupling from China, okay? But the United States has no manufacturing. It took Russia with very smart leadership. It took Russia 10 years to go from, to make the adequate progress where it's now able to withstand even heightened American sanctions. It took years. If Trump is going to try to decouple from China, which is we're deindustrialized, and we can't resource these imports from elsewhere. What are we going to? We can't make them ourselves. What are we going to do? Resource them from Uganda? I mean, we can't build them ourselves. It's we're not in a position to do this. Sorry, yeah, just you're hanging like that.
Have to go. The U.S. would have to go to total, not protectionist, but isolationist standpoint to be able to do this, and it would take decades to get back to that point.
Yeah, I mean, even if it has to take 10 years, that's can our society withstand that massive drop in standards of living? I mean, we're at the breaking point as it is right now.
In this article, where you know, the Israeli Foreign Ministry, Gideon Saar, you know, meets with Wang, Foreign Ministry of China, pointing out that the Palestinian issue is the core of the Middle East issue. Wang said the implementation of the two-state solution can solve the Middle East issue by enabling peaceful coexistence between Palestine and Israel, and thus foster friendly exchanges between Arabs and Jews. He said that Beijing is committed to upholding justice and will play a constructive role in finding a comprehensive and lasting resolution to the Palestinian issue. This is what Wang said, you know, after his meeting with Israel Foreign Minister Gideon Saar. It's what we've talked about, you know, China coming to the table and being the adult in the room and saying, look, you know, here's the deal. It's going to either be a two-state solution or nothing, you know, according to the Chinese. And so this whole taking over of the Gaza Strip, that's fantasy. You know, or is it, you know, I mean, I think Trump really believes that he can do this. I think he really believes he's got a mandate from AIPAC to do this. And that's the scary part of it. How far is the U.S. going to go to try to make this happen, you know, in the face of the Chinese?
Mm-hmm.
What will that mean for the American people? That's the scary part of it. How far is the U.S. willing to go?
Yeah.
Before acquiesce.
Yeah. So,
you went blank, Patrick.
Sorry. Okay. I said the plan was an impossibility. It's an impossibility that the United States is going to take over Gaza and turn it into the Riviera of the Eastern Mediterranean. This is a fantasy. It's an impossibility. Is it an impossibility that the United States might take a couple of steps in that direction? Is it an impossibility that the United States might send a bunch of Marines to try to clear out Gaza? That's not necessarily an impossibility. But how, you know, the United States has gone to foreign lands to try to impose its will on foreign people. When was the last time it worked out? I mean, the United States lost 50,000 people over 50,000 in Vietnam, not even counting the suicides that happened afterwards. We had at one point 560,000 troops in Vietnam, and we didn't impose our will on Vietnam. And you could look at Iraq, even you could look at Beirut, just with very minor goals. In 1983, the United States had sent over thousands of Marines. I can't remember exactly what the total was, 5,000 or something, into Beirut just to act as peacekeepers. And the next thing you knew, there was a truck bomb, and 250 or so American soldiers died, and we retreated. We're not able to impose ourselves on the other side of the world. We are able to wreak havoc. We're able to kill lots of people, but did we impose our solution on Afghanistan? Not on Afghanistan, not on Iraq, not on Vietnam, not in Beirut. So the idea that the United States, and this is a big proposal, to go in and physically remove 1.8 million people and send them somewhere. How's that going to happen?
With Vietnam and in Afghanistan, they were able to get a lot of drug money, you know, through the CIA.
Yeah.
You had the Golden Triangle and the opium fields in in Afghanistan, which became obsolete once fentanyl was a thing. But, you know, that's what they got out of it. It was lucrative, you know, for the CIA in both Vietnam and Afghanistan. But there's nothing here to gain. There's no money to be gained. You know, you're right. And there's only to be face loss on the international global scene.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
But, yeah, we have to differentiate between destruction and construction, right? So the United States is able to destroy things. It's been able to topple governments, overthrow governments, okay? That's destructive. It's been able to bomb and destroy buildings and kill people. This, it's been able to do. Say, and Israel's, it does it largely for Israel, and the Israelis are good at destroying and killing as well. But in terms of imposing your will and getting the solution that you want, there's no track record of success. You know, we destroy, and people on the other side of the world, maybe their government gets overthrown, but they withstand, and eventually they come out on top. I mean, there's Lord Miles, you can look him up. He now takes Westerners on tours of Afghanistan, and they can go and, you know, shoot weapons with the Taliban and bring back souvenir rugs that have been hand woven and depict American helicopters or American airplanes evacuating Afghanistan with people falling off the wings. So, I mean, we're not able to impose our will. We're able to destroy things, but we can't impose our will. And when Trump says he wants to remove all of these people against their will, the entire population, send them somewhere, and then have build a whole bunch of buildings, that is something that would require construction. We're not good at it. Destruction, yeah. Construction, forget it.
The way in which he said it is so blatant and forward. I mean, it literally is like, you know, Hulk Hogan or Macho Man Randy Savage in the WWF, you know, giving a speech. It's what it sounds like. You know, it's that blatant and forward. And you're like, what? Really? But he presents it. He presents it as if it's a thing, as if it's something that can be done. This leads me to get into the religious mandate that Trump and Bibi have. You know, these two individuals, Trump and Bibi, I don't think they're motivated directly by religion. So in other words, they see a financial gain in holding the greater Israel, you know, as a strategic choke point between trade, between China, Eurasia, and Africa. But both Bibi and Trump have religious zealots backing them, telling them that they have a religious mandate to do this and to build a third temple. What do you mm-hmm. think their religious mandate? And this is something that Pete Third Temple Headseth has openly, you know, stated that there should be a third temple and it's underway, and that he supports it. Does Trump and Bibi do you think they have a religious mandate as well as a financial mandate to do this thing where they get the Palestinians out and make that area total, you know, totally controlled by Israel, the greater Israel?
Well, I mean, I'm not the right person to talk about what's in scripture or whatnot. All I will say is Trump's not a religious person. And, you know, if you heard my show from earlier today, which when I say today, I mean, as people are listening to it, I have an interview with somebody who witnessed the Trump assassination attempt. And I won't say it's impossible that Trump didn't have something of a religious conversion following that. But Trump's never been a religious person. I don't think he understands scripture. So I don't think he really understands what he's dealing with. Benjamin Netanyahu is probably an atheist. I doubt he's religious. Maybe he is, but I doubt it. But I'm sure he understands the religious aspects of this very, very well. So whether there's a religious mandate or not, I'm going to kick back to you because you have a much better knowledge of these things.
I don't think that either Trump or Netanyahu believe in the religious aspect of this. I mean, they're in it for the money and the power and what's in it for them. They're very similar individuals, aren't they? Trump, what's in it for Trump? Netanyahu, what's in it for Netanyahu? But they're very much willing to use what they feel is a religious mandate. They're very much willing to use that to forward their power. And maybe they're drunk on their own Kool-Aid, both of these two individuals. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's why you see them behaving in such manner. They're drunk on the religious mandate. You know, they understand the financial mandate very well, but they're drunk on the fact that Christian Zionists and, you know, Jewish religious zealots are backing both of them to do this. And that might be, that might explain their eccentricism.
Mm-hmm. So I think you're correct. You say that they're, you know, they're both in it for themselves. They're willing to use religious zealotry if it suits them. And right now it suits Netanyahu. And I don't think Netanyahu has another choice. Netanyahu, A, is in bad health, but also he's in a lot of legal trouble. And if the war ends and he's not going to – if the war ends and if it ends, it's almost certainly he's not going to have accomplished its aims. He's out of office. Is he in prison? So he needs the war. With Trump, you know, if you think logically, the war's the last thing he needs. Yeah, he's being pushed by Meir and Adelson and other big money bags Jews, and you know, it people that helped him get elected. But he could accomplish some things domestically. He could accomplish some things internationally. You know, in terms of immigration, in terms of getting America, even getting the economy back on track, but also in avoiding foreign policy disasters in Ukraine. There's a lot of things he could accomplish, and getting and cooperating with Netanyahu on something that the rest of the world is going to put their foot down and not allow. It's going to be a big failure for him, and it could be his downfall. And so it's possible that given the right advice, given the right information, he could see that this is not in his interest to be Israel's totally outrageous bitch, right? Make America not Israel's totally outrageous bitch anymore. Manitoba, baby, Manitoba.
So what would stop China from coming in, because they held the cards globally, financially, and what would stop them from implementing a two-state solution? I've got an article from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, People's Republic of China, Special Envoy Zai Hejun of the Chinese government on the Middle East issue attends the first high-level meeting of the Global Alliance for the Implementation of the Two-State Solution. This is dated November of 24. So Special Envoy Zai Jun of the Chinese government, you know, on the issue, well, attended the first high-level meeting. It looks like they're already doing this. China is already calling for the two-state solution. They're not backing down from it. What's going to stop them from it?
So China itself isn't in a position to project military power to impose a solution on Israel or the United States, or on the Jewish state or the United States in the Middle East. But
so you don't see Chinese troops coming into Gaza.
No, unless it was like a UN peacekeeping thing, but I don't see them shooting their way in. But Iran is in a position to do so, or Iran and maybe some other nearby countries. Russia is much, much closer to the Middle East. People look at a map, and Russia is really pretty close to the Middle East. And
sometimes when your hopes have all been shattered, it's no way to turn. You wonder how you keep going. Think of all the things that really matter and the chances you earn.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau de Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com. Or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Go to RepublicBroadcasting.org. Smash that donate button like Russian peacekeepers smashing through the Azov neo-Nazi terrorists in the Donbass.
I don't think you can explain politics without looking at Jewish power any more than you can explain physics without dealing with gravity.
9/11 was a jointly conducted covert operation that involved multiple states, the Saudis, the Israelis, and what you could call the deep state in the United
with
States.
With anti-Semitic remarks.
yeah, you're jiggling juice, we used to say, the dancing Israelis.
So even the Republicans now are compromising, and they're pushing issues that are destructive to the white race. They would always say, like, are we just going to talk about this stuff on the radio? Like, what are we going to do about it?
Either we force the democracy to work by actually getting the ballot access, getting the candidates, getting in office, getting our message out there to the people, or we expose just how undemocratic it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after exercise. It's amazing, and I ordered my second bottle. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. So far, a great product is what it claims to be. Great product. A few days in, and I could feel a difference for certain. Not checking medical stats yet. I know this is really working by how I feel. We'll continue to take this product. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Nearby countries. Russia is much, much closer to the Middle East. People look at a map, and Russia is really pretty close to the Middle East. And so the idea of China, like a China-Russia-Iran kind of BRICS entity that imposes itself, even militarily, imposes a solution militarily, that's possible. China's role in it would probably be economic and industrial. I don't think they'd be playing any kind of leading military role. But because they are the world's biggest economy for all practical purposes, they would be part of a team of, you know, 3-4 countries that they could make it happen.
Well, I mentioned the key players. You know, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, it doesn't seem like it's going to be resolved unless it's by force.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people think so. It could be resolved by force, but it can also be resolved by a collapse, either a collapse of the U.S. Jewish state alliance or just a collapse of American power, you know, the American golem. Because Israel, without American backing, the Jewish state, it can't do anything. Nobody's afraid of the Jewish state if it doesn't have America's backing. And some sort of collapse, economic, political, diplomatic, in the United States, and then Israel and the Jewish state no longer has its backing. I'm trying to say Jewish state instead of Israel because I think it's important for the actions of that of the Jewish state to be on the Jewish people.
Well, it's important in biblical matters too, because there is a biblical Israel, and this secular state that's been created by the Rothschilds in the British Empire is not biblical Israel.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's another reason.
It's important from a biblical point of view, and the Christian Zionists totally view this political state as biblical Israel. That's the thing. You know, that's where Trump feels that he has a backing, I guess, religiously, is that he is advocating for the biblical Israel, when indeed it's a political state established by powerful Jewish elites in the Rothschilds and the British government.
And and atheists. I mean, the people who established it were atheists. They used the name Israel. They named their Jewish state Israel, but it was a bunch of atheist Jews.
So the pivotal country is Russia.
Huh?
The pivotal country is Russia here. What will Russia do?
Russia is kind of bogged down right now, but it's not going to be bogged down forever. The situation in Ukraine, how much longer can it go on? Well, it'll go on as long as there's still Ukrainians to feed into a meat grinder, and as long as there's still weapons and things going into it. But both of those are finite, and they're finite, and they're getting fewer and fewer. I don't know how much longer it can go on. I wouldn't bet on it going on that much longer. And then it's going to be a massive prestige blow to the United States. And we'll see. But we're almost out of time.
Thanks, Patrick. You stay classy, my friend.
I'm really trying hard. It's not always easy. I needed a little bit of help last Thursday with my Tulsi show, but I'm working at it.
All right, tune into the Bugle.
Well, hello, folks. This is Mike Gatti, the Rebel Madman at Republic Broadcasting Network. If you are searching for your inner rebel, it can be found at the Dixie Republic. It's the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to thedixierepublic.com to view all of their Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through their extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in their Johnny Reb gun and leather shop. Now remember, dixierepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
The American